Wiseman's Here podcast. Thanks for joining us after a fairly lacklustre defeat to Liverpool. I'm Stephen Goldsmith, joined by Gareth Barker as always, and we're in association with the Love Supreme. Speaking of which, we know Gareth can be very forgiving, tolerant and patient when it comes to performance levels of Sunderland. You're shaking your head there, Gareth. I think you can, generally, compared to most. We don't often disagree either, so we decided, well, we try to figure out which of the two ELS editors were likely to have the biggest moan or be the most cynical. And to be fair, we couldn't pick the two apart, so we've dragged them both in.
Well, Martin's would be the in-chief moan, because he's editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief, yeah. Martin, that just means you get to boss Chris about, though, Martin, doesn't it?
Yeah, I get to, like, he gets
that's
to
all that title means, isn't it?
He gets to make the coffee, I get to drink it.
Yeah. Okay.
That's about right.
Yeah. You alright, Chris? Yeah?
Yeah. Ready just to go? Getting closer to the microphone, that's all.
You've evolved into somewhat of a mourner, I think, in the last 12 months, Chris. Or you're just showing your true colours now?
I'm spending too much time with Gareth, I think, like. But yeah, it seems to be...
Not that much time. Stop giving the impression that we're like
Gareth does
friends.
Like a moan, he is very cynical, yeah. But not yeah. When it comes to Sunderland, generally. Yeah.
Chris is better at huffs than moans, to be honest with you.
That's
storming
fair.
Out of matches.
Yeah, you mentioned
huffs.
That just before we come on. On air, Chris, would you like to elaborate on what happened? Just because we were rubbish and that was it against Hull?
Well, it was Boxing Day, it was cold, and I had a moment where I thought, could life really get much worse than this? In the second half against Hull, it was just the worst, it was literally the worst thing I've ever seen, like, in my life.
See, this is why I advocate drinking alcohol, which you don't do. That would have made it all
yeah,
right.
Yeah, probably would have made it a bit better.
What minute was it you stormed out?
75, something like that.
Yeah, you did have to go back to work, though. You did have to go back to ALS.
Yeah.
All the way across the road.
I remember the moment, like, Quatez misplaced a pass.
He tried to pass
to Vigini 2 yards away, and he misplaced the pass, and I was like, this is... I'm done. I don't support Sunderland anymore.
And then you went to work at the
Yeah, then I
fanzine.
Went to work for the Sunderland
the
fans.
The hate Supreme fanzine.
Yeah.
Maybe you should review your professional life if you're going to go off Sunderland altogether, I think.
Yeah, but I didn't storm out at the weekend, so, you know, personal growth.
Oh, well, very nice
too
of
cold
you.
To storm out.
Exactly.
You just sort of slope out in that temperature.
In the back row that you stand, it was very sort of windy and
yeah, it was
cold.
Horrible, wasn't it?
Yeah,
horrible.
Me and Martin, like, we're sitting in the back row, so we've got all the cold behind us, you know, so I think next season.
Well, I thought it was a masterstroke actually moving there, because you know how whoever sits behind you at the match really irritates you. So that if we sit in the back row, like,
depends who it is, to be fair,
there'll be no one behind us.
The thing is, though, the man behind you at the match usually slags off Jack Colback, and like that's all right this season.
Yeah,
just hasn't been for the last five.
So who's he moved on to now?
Well, that's it. We've moved.
Oh, you've moved.
No, it's never know.
You haven't took him with you.
Also, like, there's probably about a season and a half shelf life before someone round us tries to chin my dad. So we have to, like, move every season or so, because he keeps telling people that they don't understand football and then explains exactly.
So anybody who hasn't been to a game before or is thinking about moving a season ticket can just come to you and you can review every seat in the stadium, perhaps. Yeah. Certainly every end.
Yeah.
We'll just tell you where we are not sitting. Sit there.
Right, so we're here from Gus on the Liverpool game before we get into it then.
Is this a long interview?
No, it's not. Just be patient.
No, it is long-ish. It's like, what, 3 minutes?
Well, we're wasting time now.
Depending how you see it. I mean, the first 45 minutes, we give it away completely. You know, as you know, I don't like excuses. We didn't adapt to the system of Liverpool. And if you don't adapt defensively, okay, fair enough. Then you need to use it the other way. You cannot be always in the wrong side, so very poor the first half. And by football, I mean, if you're playing against Liverpool and you're thinking that you're not going to concede every game, you're wrong. I think it's a matter of reacting and doing things the right way. In some part, we were lucky to get to halftime only 1-0, which gave us the chance to help the team with a few orders and a few change of things. And then the second half was much better. You know, sometimes you can say it couldn't get worse, but you never know in football, no? It got worse in Southampton, so you need to be careful. But overall, the second half performance is us at this moment in time. With, you know, some important players are from missing without that power to go and create a difference. So we waited at the right time to have a goal, but the players tried the best. Well, I think when you play Liverpool, you cannot give 45 minutes away. I don't accept that. And we've done it. you know, everything was clear. We cannot put any more excuses. You know, the players that were on the pitch, they played 100 times against a team with that shape, and they couldn't do things together. It was not any surprises. It was not a change of shape. It was not nothing strange. You know, players, they've been there all the time. So we lost 45 minutes. Even worse, when you need to wait until half time for us to tell them what to do, what to change, for them to go second half and do it. Okay, I think I'm going to agree with a few managers that they want to have a timeout, no? 1 minute to call everybody to the touchline and we tell them. So maybe we give us, you know, the chance to play an extra 15 or 20 minutes of the first half. They found themselves in a difficult situation and they need to readjust or do things, you know. We didn't change the shape in the second half and we were better. We didn't change the players. Then we were down to 10 and we were even better. So do you think that I told them how to play with him? No. I didn't tell him in the first half. I didn't tell him in the second. I didn't have the timeout. So that's disappointing. You know, you cannot throw 45 minutes against a top like Liverpool because you're going to get punished. And that was the difference, really. No? 1-0. Because apart from that, it was not a lot. It was a couple of shots that they were close. It's more noise from the Liverpool fans than danger because they were not even close. And then it's you going the other way and trying to put the ball in the net, which is quite hard at the moment.
Of course, trying to change the face of English football there, suggesting we get rid of the Christmas schedule and introduce timeouts, Chris.
Yes, it's a bit mental, isn't it? Like, imagine timeouts in football, managers employing tactical timeouts like they do in basketball and things like that. Mm-hmm. I agree with the winter break, in as much as, you know, you hear things like burnout and players going on holiday to Jamaica and things to combat burnout. But
it's hard, isn't it? It's hard for them.
Yeah, no, it's a hard life. Isn't it? It's a short career being a footballer, you know.
Especially if you're rubbish.
But I think there should be more football at Christmas because it's boring, isn't it, between Boxing Day and the 28th when you haven't got football on.
Aren't you? It would be easier for you.
Well, just sit in the house, get some cans in. Just go
watching on an illegal stream. You're not advocating that, are you?
No,
we'll be very happy.
It's all on. There's like about three matches on or something on Boxing Day, and then there's about another three on the 28th, and then there's another three.
I like
on
the Boxing
New
Day
Year's
one.
Day.
I'd be happy if I stop there for a little.
Maybe
bit,
the
for
one
a couple
that
weeks.
Maybe they like did the Boxing Day and then got rid of the one on the 28th, yeah, and then did New, yeah, Year's Day.
Well, there did seem like loads of matches all at once, and it was just like relentless. But now it seems quite boring. No, there's only one match a week.
What makes it stupid is that early in the season, there's like months where you play three games, and there's no midweek games. Why not just have like a midweek, move that one of the ones at Christmas to like midweek in October or something?
Oh yeah.
Why isn't there any midweek? You used to have when the league started, Premier League, you'd play Saturday, and then there'd be a game on Tuesday or Wednesday night, and then you'd play again. Like that first week of the season, you'd have like three games. And like now you go into October, you're playing three games, and you go to December, you play about seven games. It just seems a bit daft. It does seem a bit daft, like.
That's a good point.
Should we talk about the Liverpool game now?
Nah.
No.
We've done nearly 10 minutes here.
No one wants to hear about it.
How much credit do we give to Liverpool, Martin? Gareth Bale had this discussion walking in. He says how unimpressed he was with Liverpool. But, I mean, I thought they were right. I thought they moved the ball quite quickly. You know, I'm not trying to say Sunderland weren't awful, because they were, you know, being frank, but some credit to Liverpool or not?
Yeah, I'm a bit confused by it, really, because everyone seems to be really up in arms, and some people are calling for the manager's head and stuff, and we just failed to beat a team that very nearly won the league last year by the odd goal, and we were still in it at the end, weren't we? You know, there was a possibility that we might actually scrape something out of the game, especially when the free-scoring Danny Graham came on, but like it wasn't the best performance of the season, but I don't know if it was the worst, as Chris claimed on the ALS website.
I just
actually
think
after the game,
I thought it was one of the worst.
I didn't say that.
I thought it was,
yeah, you did.
No, I think Hull was the worst of the season.
I would say, like, Sal, this is good, isn't it? Mm. Top three worst games of the season. Southampton, Hull, and that one probably.
I don't think we played that badly at Southampton. We're just unlucky.
Yeah.
We just didn't really kind of create that many opportunities, did we? And we kept giving them, but we just didn't work as a unit as well as we have been. And then I think people, when I saw the team, there was a lot of confusion. It was like, well, is he trying to prove a point? Is he just taking the mickey a bit? Is he asking for more money? or all those players generally unavailable? If we were in a cup final, would they also be all unavailable that day?
I mean, I wanted to say when I was talking about Liverpool's performance there, that they moved the ball quickly and they won their individual battles, but I'm not sure what their individual battles actually were, Gareth. Regarding the Sunderland players, I thought Larsson and Gomez were getting pulled out. It looked like our players, Gus mentioned it there, obviously, it looked like our players didn't know who they were picking up, what they were supposed to do. Was that just down to Liverpool's setup and formation? Because they played that for a few games now.
Yeah, I think it was just they didn't organise themselves properly on the pitch. Maybe they didn't expect certain things to happen in the game that were happening at the time, and then I guess it's a case where you got to sort it out between yourselves who's doing what. And the fact that Van Aanholt was getting dragged inside all the time, and Giaccherini kept on having to go back in, and I mean, Gus hasn't told them to do that, surely not. I mean, that he's never done that before.
What about the point that Gus said it was half time before he could get his point across to the players? What do you think about that?
Well, it's just normal, isn't it? Well, that's the same for everyone.
Mm.
So I just think you need, like, there's too much, you know, whenever Gus says something, everyone's like, what does he mean? What's he saying that for? You know, just wait and see what happens. I think it's just too much trying to read between the lines where there isn't. You got to remember there is not a language barrier, but like, so he's going to express himself differently, you know. And like when, like, well, Steve, you've been around, and when I'm around, I don't feel as though, like, his body language isn't suggesting anything untoward a lot of the time. It's just, he's just talking.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
But then obviously it gets in the papers, and then there's a headline attached to it or something, and then once you read a headline about something, you've already made your mind up what the article's about before you've even, because it's already been suggested there. So you're reading through it, and you're being told that Gus is slagging off the supporters or whatever. You've already been told that, so that's what you're going to believe.
Mm. But then it's a manager's responsibility to word something in a way that when it reads, it won't be construed.
But then you're not going to.
You know these lazy journalists are like, they'll twist the story anywhere they can.
I'm one of them.
But where do you go from there, though? Like, you know, he's going to come out at the end and go, I'm sad that we lost.
I think he has to have an element of responsibility, like Chris is saying. I said this to you as well, that, like Chris says, you know, now, this day and age, you know that everything is going to get printed, and it's never a good thing. It's never a good road to go down, Martin, is it, when a manager starts to even mention the fans, I guess, and question the fans?
No, because, like, well, exactly, it can be twisted round, and it's better just to stay away from it, isn't it?
That's,
you know,
what I mean.
Think there's been quotes in the past that have stuck with managers. I think, was it Alan Durbin who said, like, a long time ago, he wishes our fans were as good as Newcastle's.
Was that not Tom Cowie?
It was a Tom Cowie, yeah. It was during that era, wasn't it? Yeah. Mm. And he did, like, if you read the quote, he didn't really say that at all, but that was what he was remembered as saying. But there's obviously so much focus and there's so much interview time. I think with Poyet, he could do with being, I mean, he's not quite Di Canio, where he goes on for about 3 days, but, like, no one's Di Canio there, because no one's that insane. But I do think he could be a lot more concise.
Yeah.
Because I stopped listening to him after a while. You know, he just sort of rattles on and just repeats his point.
Yeah, I don't think the majority of things he says are particularly well calculated. I think he just talks in a stream of consciousness type manner. But I suppose if you want an honest manager, then fair enough.
We credit him for that as well a lot. Yeah. He's coming out,
you know, minutes after a defeat or a victory, and he's going to say things. You know, it's pure emotion. At the weekend,
would you rather have that human side of a manager?
Yeah, the thing, he is human.
He's definitely human.
Well, maybe he'll take a mask off at the end of the season, and they'll be like,
he'll be Di Canio.
Time. I think, like, the Di Canio thing was one that was like, oh, he's just like a Di Canio light, which I think is, like, it's not true at all. Because
he's not a fascist, I'm saying.
Yeah, there's some substance behind what Poyet's doing, so. But I think it's just difficult being a Sunderland. It's difficult being a Sunderland supporter. It's difficult being a supporter of most of the teams who aren't going to be regularly finishing, you know, in the top six or can challenge for that for a number of reasons. You know, you see all the other teams, you know, going out and buying these players. You know, Sunderland tried that and it didn't work out for them, and now, you know, we're struggling to you know, build on, you know, we're trying to balance the books at the same time, but we're trying to progress, and those two things just don't go hand in hand in modern football, unfortunately. And
the difference is, though, Chris, is there an argument that sides who are down, mid-table or down, generally win their winnable, in inverted commas, home games? Now, I'll come to you because you walked out against Hull, so you seem like the right person to ask about this. Do you think it would have made a massive difference had Sunderland beat Hull, for example? Then we suddenly lost against Liverpool. Do you think there'll be you know, people would accept it more?
Oh, definitely. I mean, if you're winning the games that you're expected to win, then there's no tabloid you know, the tabloids don't run with it or anything like that. You're not seen as a struggling side. I mean, we got beat 1-0 by Liverpool. I don't think Liverpool were particularly good, but they were as good as they needed to be. And I think Rodgers made them play just as well as they needed to play to get the victory. If we lose to Spurs 1-0, then, you know, you've got, on paper, you've got to look at us, you know, conceding two goals against Spurs and Liverpool. That's not too bad.
Well, that's it. We're kind of paying for our failure to beat Hull. Yeah. To not beat, like, our failure to beat Hull, and that also, obviously, the Villa game was the perfect opportunity against. I know it's
that should have been
not
4 points,
easy,
shouldn't it? And we've got
exactly.
One from it,
and then obviously the West Ham game, they were playing well, but it was another winnable home game, and I think people do seem quite knocked at the minute.
It's hard sometimes as a family living in it on a week to week basis, though, isn't it? Yeah, it's hard sometimes to look at the big picture, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah. I think we keep mentioning the fixture list as well, don't we? We have all these winnable games, and that's why I think the whole game was so important, because it's at the back of people's mind now. Where the last time we had,
but
one
we've
of
still
games,
got, we've still got,
and Hull were awful. Let's be fair.
Yeah, but we've still got Burnley to come. We've still got QPR to come. We've still got teams down there to come. We've still got
none of which we've beaten yet.
No, we haven't. But you know, you'd think that you'd get results in some of those games eventually, and then, you know, said it last season, you've got 38 games, and where you finish is where you finish, and there's still plenty of games left. It just, I think the expression is really, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and at the moment there is a baby. And it isn't. Yeah, and
it sounds like the canny we're talking about.
It's
taken
a long time at this point.
But yeah, it is like it's something that's in its infancy. It's new to Sunderland Supporters, isn't it, to have somebody come in with an actual plan? Because we haven't had that, have we? We haven't had. What, you know, when we were successful, the root of our success, relative success, was kick it up really high to a big man who would head it to a little man who'll do a goal. That was the level of our, you know. Yeah.
If you watch those games back, quite a lot of the time we just like lost the ball over and over again.
Yeah.
But then obviously, like when it worked, it's not the type. I mean, I do admire Poyet playing the type of football that I like to see, but it just needs more sort of penetration in the final third and players with guile and everyone saying we're missing a forward. But I don't know whether, you know, there's actually quite a lot of forwards at the club. But like, I think if you give Fletcher opportunities, he'll put them away.
Would a forward have made that much difference Saturday? Because Connor Wickham was isolated a lot of the time.
We didn't have a forward on Saturday.
Yeah. Wickham was on the pitch.
He exactly. meandered about. That's the thing. People are always like, he's got to press. Like, one of the main things for the feedback on Twitter this week has been, get higher up the pitch.
Mm.
Press them higher. Well, firstly, I don't entirely agree that you should come hairing out and start running into people's faces.
I thought that was some of the problem anyway. Larsson Gomez got pulled out.
But the thing is,
the wing back. Yeah. So if anything, they were pressing too much.
You got to press in the right areas. You got to press in certain zones. So that's what we do under Poyet. Certain teams we do press high up and pen them in, and in situations in games we do press high and pen teams in. But the pressing begins from the front, and if your central striker is literally just trotting around in the centre circle,
that's why the system didn't help us as well.
And then,
isn't it?
And then
because
the problem
they had three centre halves,
no one else can press if he's not pressing. Then Larsson comes out of press. Well, he's two against one straight
away.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. There were times when Wickham was doing the pressing. They have three.
Well, he wasn't
centre-halves,
doing any
so
pressing.
So the spread. No, I'm saying, but he went to do it, and then suddenly our shape gets mucked out.
Well,
because
Graham
he's looking towards,
he came on.
He's looking towards Larsson and Gomez, and they were getting pulled out as well.
I'm not having.
I think
that
Liverpool's
Wickham
weakness is the slow at the back. So if we had fast players, obviously we don't have that many fast players, but if we had fast players running at them, then that's when you'd get like a free kick or a penalty or like create a situation. But we just didn't seem to take that into the team sheet at all. You know, like we just didn't seem to have that as a plan. I mean, like Wimbledon caused them more trouble, didn't they?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to get back to it.
We should have just got a massive, like, beast like a, guy.
Yeah, like a 20 stone forward.
I want to get back to a point we made earlier, though, just to play devil's advocate, really, because I think we're all sort of on the same page here, but a lot of our fans aren't. So, you know, it's only fair to sort of give them a voice if we can, Chris. And when we mentioned about Gus not being able to be... No, well, you know,
because he was late.
What I mean by that is, Gareth said, you know, it's understandable that Gus Poyet had to wait till half-time to get his message to the players across. Now, what levels of accountability does Gus have, though, where if you think, OK, it's obvious the players aren't adapting to this, change things before half-time if you can, maybe to move people around or whatever?
See,
and then get in at half-time and have a chat with them? I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I think it was clear to see from the opening stages that, like, Giaccarini wasn't actually up to much. When I saw the team sheet and I saw Giaccarini on the left, I thought, actually, I don't agree with that necessarily. Like, I'm not Buckley's biggest fan, but I think for his directness, he actually might have done a better job than
Giaccarini.
The problem
is they're both impact players, aren't they? They're both players that you'd actually not start with.
And I do like Giaccarini. Like, I'm a big fan. I think he's a classy player, even though it's kind of a cliche in itself, but I much prefer him centrally, even though in pre-season he did really well on the left. I just think against like a team like Liverpool, I just don't think he had any impact the full game. And I think the combination of him, Wickham and Gomez just completely killed the team off. And Van Aanholt didn't have a particularly good game either, which I don't think was his fault.
Van Aanholt one was interesting, wasn't it, Gareth? Because we were seeing last week the fact that Markovic plays as a wing-back, but he pushes on so much, could play in our hands and leave all the space behind him. Van Aanholt would capitalise on that, and of course the opposite happened.
What happened
was he was pegged back and he couldn't get forward, get out.
He was finding himself in some unusual positions. He was kind of playing as a third centre-back at some points, but not marking anyone. He was just like running around. I mean, they should have just... I mean, we talked about it on Into the Light.
Lack of match fitness, of course.
Well, I'm not going to criticise, because we know what he's capable of. So he didn't have a very good game, but lots of players didn't.
Did anybody have a good game?
That
means no. If you can't think of one instantly, no.
Johnson probably. Johnson had a decent game.
Johnson substitution was a bit strange. It's almost like you expect him to get taken off, because it's like the Mal Bronk thing where he always seemed to get taken off in every game, however well he was playing.
That leads us into something lovely, Martin, because we've got Gus Poyet talking
this
about
one's,
that.
This one's aimed at you.
Me.
Are you ready?
He was tired. Mr. Adam Johnson has been a father. He didn't train for a couple of days. He wanted to play anyway. He was good, but he was going back too much. People doesn't have a clue. I'm not bothered about what they think or what they don't, because if Mika score, you don't ask me this question. So, you know, it's very easy when the game is over for you. Law. Now I need to make decisions. I think it was the right decision because it done the law help us, but it was to a point that he couldn't go past anyone because of how tired he was. And decisions, right or wrong, that's what I'm responsible, and I'm going to take it all the time. Yes, and sometimes we are a little bit unfair with him. We give him all the responsibility. You know, I think we need that share and responsibility to go forward and create something. You know, someone needs to stand up. No always Adam Johnson.
There you go, Martin. He was physically...
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
He didn't have anything left in the tank.
So's Gaffer.
Is that it?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. You can't really respond to that, can you? But yeah, I think I can't even remember what the point was I was going to make about... Yeah, I mean, we talked about in the light, sorry, about whether he should match them up and play a 3-5-2. If we'd started in a 3-5-2, we wouldn't have done a lot worse than we did in the system that we played, because people would have known what they were doing. We could have played the system that they played exactly the same, with one up, two in behind the forward, two sitting midfielders, two wing backs and three centre backs, because he played Virginie anyway. So, you know, we were talking about him resting Virginie, and so if he's going to play him, he could have played him as a three. And I don't think that would have been a terrible idea for this game.
You also made the point that he did that last season. Liverpool was the first game when he tried the three at the back experiment, wasn't it? Now, What makes it more bizarre is that Liverpool have been, it's not like they just turned up on the day with this new system. They've been playing this for a few games now. So again, what element of responsibility does Gus have to make sure the players are better prepared for it?
I think there's a mixture of things there, isn't there? I think you can't legislate for how bad individuals were at the weekend, and that's the thing as a manager. Once across the white line, all that crap. But yeah, they were garbage, weren't they? To be fair, I mean,
he didn't have anything on the bench to change the game, though, did he? Either, you know, and it's.
Picking up the injuries this week that they did, but I mean, who would you be looking to? Rod, I mean,
before we talk about the injuries on players coming back from injuries and stuff, Martin, one thing I was really annoyed about was Virginie, Gareth just mentioned it there, starting ahead of Billy Jones. Can't get my head around that.
It did make me wonder, because I mean, obviously
he was on the bench, Jones, so he didn't come out at the end of the game and add him to the list of players he said.
But then at the same time, Alvarez was on the bench, wasn't he? And he said that he wasn't fit to play the full 90.
Yeah, but he didn't. That's it. But he didn't mention Billy Jones.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He was okay.
I mean, I think if you've got, I know it probably goes against the grain of the last 10 years of the history of Sunderland Football Club, not having two fullbacks on the pitch. But I think if you've got two available fullbacks playing on the correct foot, then you should have them in the team, especially, you know, just to give you more width.
Yeah. Especially in a system as fullbacks.
If Jones is fit, like, play him, because he's not fit that often, is he? You know.
it would have been an extra outlet to relieve some of the pressure as well, wouldn't it?
And like, obviously, Virginie's like teacher's pet, but you know, like, it's his favourite. But he could have always dropped Wes Brown. You know, he's always on about how Wes Brown can't play that much, so giving him a decent rest might have sort of had a bit more in the tank for him later in the season. I'd like to see Virginie like have a run at centre half, so he had that opportunity, didn't he? I mean, it was obviously something he thought about, and maybe he thought overall the back four was featured Virginie more than Jones. But I mean, we might even have three fullbacks available soon, so at some point he's going to have to make the decision. Like what
so is that him being overcautious then? A lot of people are labelling that at him at the moment. Being overcautious.
I don't know if he is overcautious or whether the midfielders we've got.
I mean but the inclusion of Virginie ahead of Jones would suggest that to some, I guess.
Yeah.
I suppose it gives us more like sort of height and stuff, but I think, you know, Virginie's is skillful, but he just doesn't bomb forward as much.
But I guess, Chris, what I mean is it suggests he's worrying about what's happening going backwards and going
forward. Less focused on attacks, more on defence. I think that is the main criticism aimed by certainly a section of our fans at Poyet, that he sets the team up not for the win but for the draw, even against teams we should be beaten.
I don't see it as him setting the team up for a draw. I see it as him setting the team up with the players he's got as the best opportunity to get a result, a positive result. That's the thing. It's just because you don't play like three strikers, like if you play three strikers, does that mean you're going out to win the game? I'd argue that you're going out to lose the game, because that's going to make you weaker in the game, and it's going to create more chances for you to concede. We haven't got. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the players who were out injured. So who were they? Fletcher, who probably would have played, and then you had Rodwell. You're obviously not a big fan of Rodwell, but you probably would have played. To be fair to him, he has been a little bit better recently. Altidor, well. Who else? I can't even remember. But there's three. I mean, are they, only Fletcher's really the one you're going to bring in, and Cattermole. Probably Rodwell. Cattermole, sorry. So Cattermole's a key player then. You know, Rodwell possibly and Fletcher possibly. But I mean, it's not exactly like they've got somebody there like banging down the door going, you know, I can't believe we're missing this guy. I mean, Cattermole would be one of those because he's really important in that system. But and that it's an interesting point that you made about Bridcut and Cattermole, if you want to make that point.
No, I think Cattermole's absence was huge, because when Bridcut plays that role, the Cats does, a lot more of the play goes through him. It starts with him, and he passes the ball out. We saw it with Key as well when he played there last season. Now, when Cattermole started to do that initially, he made some mistakes. So some of that responsibility has been amputated from him, and they kind of miss Cattermole out sometimes when they're going forward. And I think that was further proof that when Bridcut got sent off, suddenly we didn't have to go through this area of the field. We got the ball forward quickly, and we played better.
Yeah, I was going to mention that before the sending off. I don't think it was, they were both technically yellows, but they were both a little bit harsh. I thought he was unlucky to get two, but it didn't seem to make that much difference, did it?
Well, it improved us, I think. Yeah. We played better from that point.
I think that that's the thing with Rodwell as well. I mean, obviously, if he was injured, then fair enough. But it would be interesting to see him when Cattermole's not there. It'd be interesting to see him play that role.
Yeah, because I mean, Brid
did at Man City, didn't he?
Brid cuts exactly. Very, very deep.
I think
though,
it's his natural role. Mm. And when I've spoken to people who work with him at Everton, Man City, they sort of said that they see him in that role or as a central defender long term, just because of his physique and his natural attributes. Where he's clearly not like a box to box skillful player. The only sort of attacking thing he does is he's good on corners.
He was presented to us as a box to box player when he signed.
Yeah, but other people are presented as utility players and they never play more than one position.
About Bridcut or Gareth too deep, because at times we were it was almost like we had a back six.
I mean it was a mess in the first half, wasn't it? I mean, Gus has said himself it was pointless. It was a waste of a half of football from Sunderland's perspective, and to get out at 1-0 was, you know, we were fortunate.
There's such a confidence team at the minute. Just like the whole game was like the classic example where we came out like still on a high from the Newcastle game, and they were playing like lovely football for the first 25 minutes or whatever it was, and then as soon as one thing goes wrong, like the whole plan just goes out the window, and they stop playing decent. And it was obviously Liverpool got an early goal on Saturday, and then Poyet wanted half time straight away so he could like restructure the team. I do think that
that's
they miss,
what I'm saying. So do you
they
think
miss Cattermole in that position, don't they? Because there's not enough leaders on the pitch to say, right, come on, let's get the ball down.
Do you think there's more that Gus could have done than going back to that point again? I'm just bringing it up again. If it was that obvious we were going to have to wait till half time, is there more that he could have done from the sidelines or not?
Well,
it's altered the shape slightly.
Yeah, exactly.
Or?
Maybe he certainly, I don't think he could have made a substitution. You sometimes see them before half time, but he obviously decided that Graham and Mandarin weren't sort of good enough or sort of fit enough collectively to come on until the last 15 minutes. So a lot of people around me were criticising the late substitution because of what he had on the bench. I think sometimes when you're playing and you know there's not a great deal on the bench, you kind of go into this comfort zone. Whereas if you've got a direct replacement for yourself, you've got that extra little bit of incentive. I know people should always try as hard as what they should, but it's human nature. And I think, obviously the Johnson thing, I think he was quite surprised to go off.
Did the players look mentally shot in a way, Chris? It was almost like an end-of-season performance.
I was just actually going to say, the thing that actually really knocked me about Saturday was when we conceded that goal, the players just strolled back to the halfway line to kick off, and like they barely spoke to each other. There was no communication at all. Like, O'Shea should be in the faces. When Cattermole's on the pitch, if you concede a goal, people won't dare look at him, because if they meet his eye line, he'll be in the face telling them what they did wrong. And I know he's no angel, but
so what's brought this irrational fear on them? Because I mentioned when I was speaking to Neil, who does the Anfield Rap podcast, after the game, he asked me for a summary of the game, and I said before Bridcut went off, and in the first half in particular, we were playing with this sort of irrational fear.
I don't think it was fear so much. Well, it might have been.
But the players playing inside just, themselves, that's generally what it is.
Just completely flat. I wouldn't say it was fear. It was
just not good enough.
Lack of enthusiasm, really.
But that's
I just think it. I think if he'd took Gomez off, brought Jones on, and then brought Jacquarini, just mirrored them, brought Jacquarini and Johnson in where they were playing Coutinho and... I can't remember who else was playing in the middle off the front, but they had obviously Barini up front, and then they had two in behind him. They should have just done that. That's what I think.
Our midfield was just like mediocre.
Yeah,
like the whole.
Well, Gareth's been talking about Gomez for a while. I think he's been a little bit harsh at times. I think
but he has too many.
After this game, again, like we've said, you hear more and more people sort of question Poyet. I think Gomez was certainly mentioned a lot by our fans after this game.
He's mind blown. Watching Gomez playing is actually mind blown. He plays at a completely different pace to anyone else on the pitch. We can't play with pace with him in the team.
Gareth.
It's as simple as that.
It's like when we had Riveros, the guy that
the Paraguayan.
Yeah, he was just too slow for the Premier League. It's
scored in the
like
World
that.
Cup and everyone got excited.
He's obviously like a decent footballer, Gomez, in terms of being able to, the goals that he scored this season like prove that, but he just slows down the game.
Yeah. If we're trying to forge a counter attack, the ball comes through him and he scores back to the goal, he won't like pass to the side and try and play it into someone or pass behind him so they can pass in front. He'll look behind him, turn round, and then look what's in front of him, by which point he's already been tackled.
Yeah. That it really, like, Craig Gardner used to get caught on the ball a lot. But Gomez,
oh, you
dear
can't
me.
Slag off Craig Gardner when Chris is here, but okay.
Dear me, I tell you what, Gomez, they should. I don't know what man on is in Spanish.
But on man up.
They need to learn what that is and shout it at him a lot, because dear me, he's carrying the ball and he's like, you can see what's coming from a mile off. I know obviously we've got a picture of the pitch from where we're sitting, but he must have a mental idea of what's around him. I mean, he's a professional footballer. He's got a peripheral vision. Yeah. He must know that he's going to be, well, if I run with the ball for 30 yards at 1 mile an hour, then someone eventually is going to catch us. Like, what's he doing? Like, he's just phenomenal. I've never known. Like, and the fact he scored three goals this season.
The depressing fact is
El Hombre on, Gareth. I've just googled
it. El Hombre.
Brilliant. Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, the depressing fact is that he's one of our top goal scorers this season. And Rodwell, who apparently hates so much, he's got two. And to be honest, actually, going back to the Rodwell point,
have you changed your mind on Rodwell and all, Chris, the last couple of weeks?
He's got to be better than Gomez, hasn't he? He's got to come in for Gomez now, hasn't
different
he?
Type of player, though.
Yeah, but if you're going to play three, he's going to have to come in for Gomez.
We should just sit back now and let, because, you know, Chris hates Rodwell and Gareth hates Gomez, and we should let them
both. I think that's terrible. I think priority spending, I think centre back isn't even a priority anymore. It's centre midfield and striker.
But we just keep on buying loads of.
I agree with the
random midfield.
We've needed one for ages, and I thought Rodwell was going to be a certain kind of player, and he isn't.
I think Rodwell will be if they just put him in and give him a run in the team.
He's never.
I think
be
like Larson and Catamol have played so well. I think like the likes of Jacquarini and Gomez, I think the impact players to come on later on. You know, when the other team's tired, I think Gomez will have more time on the ball, and Jacquarini can buzz around. His movement's good, but I don't think the consistent sort of workman like players and that showed on Saturday.
How much of a problem is it then that we keep saying this, Gareth, now we keep saying it's hard to find a place for Jacquarini, even though he's a quality player, he plays for Italy. Jack Rodwell, you know, is clearly a quality player, but we can't seem to find a position for him to play. Alvarez is another. We have all these players we can't find.
Do you know what is funny is that none of them fit into the players that were bought, basically. I mean, Rodwell, you could understand why they bought him and if they thought he'd play in the system that Poyet's got in mind. The rest of them don't. I mean, he inherited Jacquarini, he's brought in Alvarez. They don't fit in that system. But I can't think of a system in, like, you could play Jacquarini in a 4-4-1-1, like, in the hole. Right, that's it.
Yeah,
that's how it looks at the moment.
Alvarez would change the dynamic of outside, because then like Catamol's position would be redundant.
Yeah, it doesn't look like you can play Alvarez anywhere at the moment. I can't see where you can play him.
Alvarez just hasn't been given it.
Yeah, like he hasn't. To be fair, but when you watch him, do you just not think
he's playing too deep?
You can't play him.
He's played too deep,
but he's not.
He's very much an inside
picking the ball up. Yeah,
I don't think there's a player better running at defenders in our team. Maybe Johnson's probably the best. I'd say Alvarez second. Like,
yeah. I would go along with Alvarez being
which would be back to the old argument and back to the old theory that these players aren't receiving the ball high up enough field, which would mean we need a better second.
You go back to the whole game though, and like Alvarez gets in because Wickham's out, and you're thinking this is your chance. You're not going to get a better chance to prove yourself and you know, on match of the day when you've Canton do a 3-0 win, they're going to go, oh, Ricky Alvarez, let's have a look at Ricky Alvarez and talk about him for 2 or 3 minutes. That's what I'm thinking. If you're Alvarez, you've got to be thinking, this is my day and Wickham's not getting back in. Exactly. What? And he was garbage? Like,
the other thing he seems to have forgotten is that Larson's actually like a right winger, and I know he's kind of changed his style and he's been really good.
He's evolved now, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's evolved, but like sometimes when he's played other people on the wing that maybe wouldn't have as much of an impact, he could always move Larson out there for a game. You know, if he wanted to give Rodwell and Catamol a bit of a chance.
And if you have Fletcher in the side as well,
yeah.
That's
if you get your best players on the pitch, you know, he's happy to play Wickham out of position out wide. So why not like move Larson out to the right, like
to his natural position
on occasion?
Yeah, yeah.
I think the thing with Wickham is because he wants to try and recreate that B word position. So.
Well, he was alluding to that again, wasn't he? Talking after when he was talking about Buckley. When he was talking about when he was talking about Buckley after the game, and he was saying like nobody else can make these runs behind, and of course he's getting at the player who did that last season, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I actually thought that Barini had a decent game in front for them, and
he'd mentioned his name.
it just came out.
What do you think about the reaction that Barini got?
Well, it didn't sound like he was getting booed
It's weird though that he wasn't even on the bench when we played them down there.
Yeah, it's the first time he started in the league, isn't it?
I went for a drink with some Liverpool fans after the game, and they were saying that, you know, the thing about the other players that they had available, like Lambert was on the bench, England international, Balotelli obviously had a problem by wearing like no studs that day and fell over. That was the best thing that happened in the whole game.
It was
just weird that like Barini was like in ahead of them, having never started a game up front.
He played at Madrid, didn't he, up front in the Champions League when they made all those changes? Yeah,
first league game he started though, isn't it?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
I can remember.
It was the opposite psychology that he played like at Anfield, where he didn't even make the bench. You know, it's like
it's weird. Like,
show him what he can do.
Worked though.
They won the game.
I wish we had him. He was in the tunnel, like standing on the steps, like talking to some people, and I was like, get a brown bag and just like whisper off and like put him in the bowels of the stadium to like February 3rd, and then be like, oh, I've got him. I do that. Remember that advert for Virgin or something with Coolio? Can you remember that?
I remember a film where they did it with a basketball player. Dan Aykroyd was in.
No, there was this woman, and she's got like she asked for Coolio's autograph, and he signs it, and then it's like it turns out to be like a contract of marriage. And he ends up living.
Actually Wycliffe.
Was it Wycliffe? Yeah, Sean? I am racist.
So you've just admitted that you are racist.
Well, I actually thought it was Coolio. I'm not down with the kids. I don't know about Snoopy Dogg and
just
them.
To steer the conversation back so you don't get lambasted from the football community.
The line, I think you'll find it's legally binding. That was the line.
Yeah, that was the line.
And that's what I should have done with Barini. That's where we're going. Yeah. I probably would have ended up asking, I don't know.
Who in jail.
You know what? Another Italian man, because I'm xenophobic as well.
When Barini rounded the keeper on Saturday, I actually felt my heart breaking a little bit. Like, I thought he was going to score.
Maybe he heard it.
Then he missed on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, you know that thing on The Simpsons where Ralph gets his heart broken by Lisa, and you can pinpoint the second where his heart breaks? I could feel it.
Everybody linked that to Manoni, his goal he conceded.
Do you know what's funny about...
Celtic Pride is the film.
No, I've seen Celtic Pride. It's Daniel Stern and Dan Aykroyd. Yeah. Larry Bird.
The kidnapped basketball player, yeah.
I thought you were talking about Space Jam.
No.
Kidnapped Michael Jordan. That's got Dan Aykroyd in.
They did what Gareth wanted to do with Barini, and they kidnapped...
They kidnapped him and kept him for... Yeah. No, it was... They were playing against...
He might have played for a rival.
They were playing against him in the NBA Finals.
So they didn't want him to play, yeah. Well, it's similar concept. You just kidnap someone you want to play for you instead and force them to play for you.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway... I can't remember what we're talking about now.
That's a tangent.
Yeah, Barini, though. Yeah, we should buy him, shouldn't we?
Well, people don't want to hear us mourn about Liverpool for...
Yeah, I can't remember. I think we're getting to a good point then, and then you spoiled it by mentioning... Celtic Pride.
We weren't getting a good point.
If we were just
longing for Barini to return, then that's not a good thing for anybody.
Probably not. No.
It actually baffles us. Like we're missing a certain player. We're not fulfilling the potential that a certain position could give us in the system. The ideal player we need would be a Barini type player. There's a player who's not getting
games. Is that a new term in football?
There's a player who's not getting games for his club, Barini. There's an affordable player, Barini. And I just sign for us. What are you doing?
I know.
Just sign for us.
This is a personal just message sign now to Fabio.
I reckon we
should tweet it, lass.
Just sign for us, definitely.
I think it would be a mistake.
Nobody ever thought of that before.
I think it would be a mistake because it's almost like...
he would be
Nine
garbage
months,
like,
since he was like firing in all cylinders. If we'd sign him in the summer, he could have continued the momentum that he'd built up, but now there's just too much negative
energy. He's got too much his liver cheese all out of kilter now.
It's all wrong.
I think if he came, he'd be like, this is much better, isn't it, because everyone doesn't hate us for starters, because they don't like him down there. Like, they see him as somebody who did them out of 14 million quid because he didn't move.
He rejected the move.
Imagine if someone had bid for Altidore 14 million quid and then he wouldn't go. That's where we'd be.
We would could kidnap out the door then, couldn't we? Because that's what we're advocating tonight, Gareth.
Yeah, maybe that's why he wasn't on the bench.
We're going to go and write a movie script after this, aren't we?
Take him to Toronto.
Or an actual plan.
Probably a better actor than
anyway.
Surely Altidore's got to go. Was he pretending injured on Saturday
as well?
Ill.
Vomiting.
Well, watching videos of his misses.
Vomiting in the night.
That's the word, Martin. Can we be cynical about that one? He didn't play the game before either.
No.
He wasn't in the squad the last two games.
Mm. Is that based on ability?
Well, we don't know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Do we believe what we're being told, or should we? Is there a conspiracy theory and he doesn't want him to get injured so we can get rid of him?
Well, if he's going to go, they could just, like, this is what happens every year. Everyone goes, like, oh, well, it's like the 13th of December, or it's the middle of December. The transfer window is going to open soon. But, like, we're halfway through January. Like, if Altidore's going to go, just get rid of him.
Yeah. I think it's finding a buyer.
I think it's different with the MLS, though, isn't it? Because it's like they buy named players or something, then assign them to teams or something like that. It's like weird. It's not like the Americans
Don't slag off America.
Yeah, it's not like the Americans to come up with some really excellent ideas on how to improve football. Just let your team sign players.
No. We can't go out on
that. Actually, I've got an interesting question. Actually,
you could allow clubs to make up football clubs and let them in your league, so they can sign players and then loan them back to teams in England.
You've completely lost his ear, Gareth, mate. Honestly,
New York City FC.
Would you take Vigili permanently?
Depends how much he was going to cost, I guess.
I don't think anyone actually knows who owns him, so.
Yeah.
Where do we pay the money? That's the issue.
Yeah. A couple of million quid, I think everybody would take him just because he didn't cover that right back position. He looked all right centre half alongside O'Shea as well.
Is he proven at centre half? Do you think?
That's why players generally.
Do you think, I suppose, by
signing him on loan and not playing him at centre half, then we don't know if he's proven or not.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
You could always find out by playing him then, playing Billy Jones at right back.
I think you would sign him though
because.
He obviously loves him, doesn't he?
But then you're looking at a player who's got 18 months Premier League experience, who's played regularly, and then you're not going to sign him.
I think you will. If you can get him for a couple of million quid, it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think he's mint, even though he's like not a bit weird as well.
He's kind of like
one of those ironic cult heroes.
Yeah.
I think he's not being done any favours by played at right back at the moment. He's starting to look not very good.
Which just makes the Jones decision even more.
Yeah, I think that's a way you can definitely criticise Poyet for the weekend, is not picking Jones, and I think that would be justified criticism because
he talks about him at the end of the game.
Well, didn't have a chance, wasn't allowed.
That would have been I would have butted in with that one. I would have just shouted it.
Just crying.
Even if it wasn't on record. Oi! What did I pay Jones for?
Oi, amigo.
Hombre on. Yeah. Okay, just before we finish, what's the tolerance levels like towards Poyet, Martin?
Personally?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be ridiculous to put that much pressure on him at the minute. I think he does need to be backed from what he achieved last season. You know, I think people have got short memories in football.
Very much so.
But I think he did really well last year. And the only thing I'd say negatively is that his summer buys are all... Like, none of them have been a great success. So maybe that's why Ellis Short's kind of been a bit... I know it's a difficult window to buy people in, but we do need to get a forward in and get rid of a couple.
They're confident that's going to happen?
I think it has to happen, you know.
Are you confident about that, Gareth? I think certain people, the indication is that it won't.
The thing is, it's going to... The business, I think we all need to get used to the idea that the business, if it is done... is going to be done near the end of the window.
Yeah.
That's probably because either they're trying to negotiate with the players, it's not, or they're waiting to see which players the players want are available. Maybe other teams will do deals which will release players that they want, stuff like that. So I think it's important not to get anxious about the fact that a player isn't coming in until late in the window, because it's quite easy for people to decide that it's a panic buy. But you've got to play the long game with certain players, and I think it's, you know, again, talking about Barini, you can really understand why they waited and waited and waited until the last day of the transfer window to see if they get that deal done, because that has been a massive, massive hole in the side.
But it's turned out to be an error, though, hasn't it?
But you can understand. You can understand in a way why. I guess the fact they didn't have. But then who? I mean, who would it have been? I guess that's a discussion for for another day.
Because Chris was so late, we haven't got time.
That Asaidi's going to that Asaidi's been recalled. He's been sold to Al Ahly in Qatar for £5 million.
Then is it?
But I quite like the look of him. I thought he would be a player that could play in that area.
We should try and kidnap him.
Yeah, we might get kidnapped in Qatar.
Okay, right.
And
thanks
to build stadiums for the World Cup.
The ALS lads for dropping in.
Racist.
What's the old saying? Keep the faith. Did you coin that actually?
Did you coin keep the faith?
No, it related to Sunderland, I mean.
It was Sobs.
Obviously, not coin the phrase totally. Related to Sunderland, you know what I mean? It was or your thing, wasn't it?
It was Sobs, was it? Yeah. Sobs put it at the end of everything he wrote. But I mean, obviously, we didn't make it up.
No.
We don't invent words, Steve.
We did invent mint.
You should try and invent some words. It's great.
In fact, we were one of the few people, the first people to publish the word Magnum, wasn't it? There's a reference in the British Dictionary to that.
Okay.
There you go.
Hopefully,
that wasn't too downbeat for listeners, actually, because considering that was a rubbish performance, I think we managed.
Did you ever publish the word limbless in the ELS?
No.
Because it's not a word.
Right.
I don't know, I thought it was a word.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Over and out.